This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Cut him every trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time, we provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And off and running on this Tuesday. It is August 3rd. It is once again time for DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. And once again, I am not any of those three people. Gordon Damer in for the R&R boys. The R&R boys, obviously Rothenberg and Rick, they continue to rest up and relax while you know who continues to show up and do the work. That, of course, would be the one, the only, Chris Canty. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Gordon. I'm a little bit surprised that the R&R boys are taking this much of a break, man. I mean, you could say that those guys are load managing, getting ready for the football season.
Oh, my Lord.
And those are guys that are adamantly opposed to that. So it's a little bit surprising seeing how they're taking so much time off.
Kawhi Leonard is saying, guys, it's time to get back to work. It's time
now
to
exactly. Look at this obese man that's going to sit in the chair.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, look, I'm sure if you use your vacation time like they use their vacation time, we will not see you in November and December. I mean, you must have a lot of it stored up someplace because those two guys, they use it. Yeah. They swing it around. Let's put it out there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But around here, what do they say? If you don't use it, you lose it. So those guys are taking full advantage. I don't blame them.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I don't blame them.
We got a ton to run down today, right? The Yankees last night. I mean, that loss for them was so on brand to go out after a good weekend. Everybody's starting to feel pointed in the right direction. We had, I think it was the last caller of the day yesterday asking us about, are you back on the Yankees bandwagon? Have they turned it back around? Only to go out and lose to the Orioles the way they did. I mean, that was so 2021 Yankees. We'll get to that. We'll get to the Mets.
Gordon, the cat gave the Orioles more trouble than the Yankees lineup did.
It was like the grounds crew had never seen a cat before. Like, they didn't know that, it's not going to fly away. We actually have to go out there and do something. If they didn't open that door, that cat would still be running and the grounds crew would still be chasing it.
The cat was like Barry Sanders out there, Gordon. He was just breaking ankles all over the place. I still can't figure out why it took them so long to figure out a way to get the cat off the field. Just it was hilarious to me.
Yeah. I mean, Michael brought it up on the broadcast. Is somebody going to go get it? I mean, it was just sitting there for like a good 2-3 minutes before anybody said, you know what, we're going to have to go get this thing. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the Mets' bad weekend, which continued on Monday. But let's start with the Knicks, because they did not waste any time yesterday. NBA free agency, the NBA offseason, off and running. And partly I want to leave with the Knicks because of what they did, but partly I just can't take the Yankees anymore. So Knicks go out. They basically said, you know what, we're rolling it back to a certain degree. They bring back Derrick Rose, which was about as predictable as any move will be this offseason. They bring back Nerlens Noel. For Rose, 3 for 43. Noel, 3 for 32. Alec Burks is back, 3 for 30. And then I guess the big move, they go out and they sign Evan Fournier to a contract, 4 years, $78 million. Clearly focused on kind of keeping their core together, replacing Fournier, replacing Bullock with Fournier. So what were your initial impressions of the Knicks day one of free agency?
Well, Gordon, it felt a lot like musical chairs, and the Knicks didn't want to be left without a spot when the music stopped. And you saw some of the other potential point guard targets that the Knicks were looking at kind of come off the board, and it just felt like this was the path that made the most sense. Like, let's bring back Derrick Rose, who played really well. I think he finished second in Sixth Man of the Year voting. So let's go ahead and bring him back. Let's go ahead and re-sign Nerlens Noel, who filled in great for Mitchell Robinson, somebody that was injury-prone. Noel is a guy that you've proven that you can rely on, and then go ahead and re-sign Alec Burks, who was great off the bench, and he was able to provide some point guard relief with that second unit. That's something that you also, you know, might need if you're not able to pull off another move this offseason for a trade for a point guard. So it just, the moves that they made sense, and then upgrading to Evan Fournier, having him take over where Reggie Bullock left off. Like, I just feel like that made a lot of sense as well. So I like the direction that they're going in, but it just didn't feel like there was that opportunity out there for that big swing, at least early on in the offseason. So we'll just have to kind of monitor it, see what happens. But, you know, this is what the best way for them to use their cap space as far as Leon Rose views it. And I have a hard time disagreeing with it because, again, it was a team that a lot of people fell in love with last year just with the way that they played.
Yeah. And look, none of the moves, I would say, were surprising because you did want to – I mean, I said Derrick Rose being back, you know, to get him and to pair him up with Tom Thibodeau, you knew no matter what, Derrick Rose was almost certainly going to be back with this Knicks team. So that doesn't surprise you. The other moves don't surprise me, but I have to admit there is a little bit of a back and forth that I went through looking at each of the moves. Not that I don't like any of the moves per se, but it's not like you're getting any bargains, right? Like, part of the reason why these guys, they did absolutely overperform what their contracts were last year, and each of them getting, I think it's each of them got three-year deals, so it's not like you're spending or breaking the bank per se, but I thought that this offseason was about upgrading the talent, right? Like, it's not just about bringing back the same crew, and I think one of the criticisms of the Tom Thibodeau hire was that you would be a little worried because of his reliance on veterans so much that you would lock yourself into a lot of his type of guys and it would kind of cap your ceiling. Now, look, the Knicks aren't done. I'm sure they're going to do other things. Evan Fournier is an upgrade, I think, over Reggie Bullock in terms of what the Knicks need. But it did not exactly blow me away, and I can see there being some criticism of just kind of rolling it back with the same group as they had last year.
Well, I mean, Gordon, you got to have somebody that wants to take your money, and you got to have willing participants if you're going to go out there and make a big splash via trade. And it just didn't seem like at the time any of those options were available for Leon Rose. So I think this was the next best thing. I mean, ideally, you want to upgrade the talent level on your team. But, I mean, if there's not a move to be made, then this is your fallback, which is trying to bring back the core of your team last year, which was a group that was good enough to be able to be the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference and host a home playoff series in the first round. So I get what you're saying. Like, none of the moves are like offensive when you look at the years or the money that they doled out. But at the same time, it does leave a little bit left to be desired just because, you know, you felt like this is a team that you want to see take that next step. And you know that they can't unless you add some more dynamic playmakers to this squad, especially in the backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly cannot be done here. But, I mean, if I'm putting on my positive Knicks hat, obviously you wanted to bring back a lot of the core guys that you relied on last year. It's an upgrade to me going from Bullock. He's not going to be in the starting lineup like he was last year. It's going to be Evan Fournier, who I think is an upgrade offensively. Elfrid Payton's not going to be back. But the Knicks, as long as they realize, and I think they do, they still need to go out and get a point guard. Mm-hmm. If they're going to rely on Derrick Rose, which I didn't think they wanted to do last year, eventually they were forced to because of Peyton's struggles, they can't be relying on him in the starting lineup. They have to know that, right?
No, I don't think they can rely on Derrick Rose in the starting lineup, but I guess it's a situation where they got to bring in another point guard to be able to share in those minutes. Because Derrick Rose, ideally you want him playing anywhere from, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night, and then you've got somebody else that can kind of share in the workload. I don't know that's one of those things that they just didn't see the guy that they wanted, or they're waiting for the price of the guy that they're looking for to come down a little bit. But, I mean, you know, you saw how aggressive teams around the NBA yesterday were in terms of trying to make moves and lock guys up. Like, this is going to be fast and furious, and you just hope that the Knicks don't get left out when it comes to finding somebody that's going to be able to share that workload with Derrick Rose. Because the last thing you want to happen, Gordon, is to try to play Derrick Rose 30, 35 minutes a night and the guy breaks down in the middle of the season. Like, that's the last thing you want, because all of a sudden you stifle the development of all the other young players that you have on this team, namely RJ Barrett. That's the one that you look at the most and you're saying he needs a point guard to help him to continue to ascend as a player. And although Derrick Rose is great, you realize Derrick Rose is going to be limited because he can't be that guy night in, night out, playing 35 minutes a game. It's not going to happen. So they have to have some urgency about finding a point guard. But here's the thing. I don't think it's not because they're looking. I just feel like some of the guys that they had targeted early decided they were going to do other things. Like Lonzo Ball signed with the Chicago Bulls as a restricted free agent. Chris Paul re-signed with the Phoenix Suns. Kyle Lowry got traded to the Miami Heat. So it's just like those are the guys that the Knicks were in, were potentially targeting, throughout the offseason, and it just felt like those things weren't going to materialize for them. So now they had to move on to their plan B, which is making sure that they brought back a core guys that they could trust. Now we'll see what they can do in the trade market.
Yeah, and I do think that they kind of struck the right balance in keeping what they had together and not taking a step back. But also not locking themselves in to something that's going to take away from their flexibility, right? Like we all realize that at some point the Knicks are going to have to find that transcendent superstar that they're going to be able to trade for or bring in some way. And it wasn't going to be through free agency this year, but they didn't lock themselves into any contract now that's going to remove that flexibility long-term. Let's hear from Bobby Marks, who gives us some thoughts about the Knicks' approach to free agency this year.
New York went the continuity way. And, besides Evan Fournier, who they signed, you bring back Nerlens Noel and you bring back Alec Burks, certainly, Derrick Rose here. And that's kind of how they're going to, enter the season. And I think what New York does is now you have a bunch of controllable contracts out there. If the time comes if there's a deal to be made for one of these disgruntled all-stars, as I always say, then you have these team-friendly type contracts that, you could potentially move down the road.
Yeah, so kind of keeping that flexibility while also kind of rewarding and locking into at least, all right, we know this group, we know these guys, and we know how the fit. Like I saw one article about, how do the Knicks' moves fit with this team? Well, you kind of know because outside of Evan Fournier, who should be an upgrade in terms of outside shooting, these are guys that you relied on down the stretch last year.
They're guys that you relied on, and they're guys that produced. I mean, they exceeded everybody's expectations last year, but the question that we all have moving forward now is what happens with this team with the Eastern Conference that we're seeing right now, like when the Brooklyn Nets come back healthy, those big three, and then the Philadelphia Sixers, whatever they do this offseason, they're still going to be around there, anchored by Joel Embiid. The Milwaukee Bucks that just won the chip, the Atlanta Hawks that made it to the conference finals, Miami now that they've added Kyle Lowry and retained Goran Dragic, Boston with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum back and healthy together again, and not having to deal with the impact of COVID on their season potentially. So Indiana with Rick Carlisle as their head coach. All of these teams are going to be improved. Where do the Knicks fit in that pecking order? And, that's the biggest question. I mean, talent-wise, it's hard to make a case to say that the Knicks are more talented than any one of those teams that I just rattled off.
No, they're not.
You're talking about them being on down there, potentially a seventh or eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, and it's not that they would fall off. It's just that everybody around them is improving. So that's why, a lot of Knicks fans feel like this was an offseason where you wanted to try to be aggressive and add to what you already have in that locker room and build on the success that you had in year one with Leon Rose and Tibbs.
Yeah, and I think your level of happiness or disappointment comes from what your expectations were or are going into this offseason. I think that the blueprint that the Nets put forward a couple of years ago, I don't think that's really a repeatable blueprint for other teams. I know Knicks fans kind of feel that way, like, hey, we've had our respectable season when we made the playoffs and we showed that we should be a destination point for free agents and this type of stuff. But it's pretty clear at this point that the Knicks are going to have to kind of go through a little bit more of a slow building process rather than, hey, we had one good season and now free agents are going to target us as the place to be. It's about, I think now with this group, kind of building it up slowly and keeping your options open for when that superstar does become available, but just kind of thinking that you'll throw it out there, 41 wins, the fourth seed in the East, and then all of a sudden people are going to be flocking to the Garden. That clearly is not what's going to happen. And whether or not the Knicks have actually improved all that much, I think it's an improvement, but I don't know whether or not it's all that much. I don't think that they did that much yesterday to close the gap between those teams that you mentioned.
No, they didn't. But here's the thing, and I understand where Knicks fans are coming from, looking across town and seeing what the Brooklyn Nets did, but the Brooklyn Nets situation just timed up perfectly with the free agent class of 2019. Like that it just felt like okay, we just made the playoffs. We showed that we're a functional group. We turned D'Angelo Russell into an all-star. And now all of a sudden, this feels like a place where, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant can come and build whatever it is that they want to build. Like, it all set itself up perfectly. You don't have that type of scenario this offseason. Like, there aren't those guys out there that you would say are transformative players that are free agents. You know what I mean? And the ones that are, they expected to re-sign with the current teams that they're at. So it was one of those situations where you weren't going to be able to lure, you know, a couple of max contract guys over. It just wasn't going to happen. Now, the good thing is that you do have a core of players that were able to get you to the playoffs, and that will be the expectation going into the next season. You know, it's just this is a playoff caliber team. And so for Knicks fans, I mean, there's got to be a part of you that's just happy that your team is playing competitive basketball, and it feels like the success that they had this past year is going to be sustainable, albeit it might not be at the same seed in the Eastern Conference. It still feels like this Knicks team is going to be a playoff team. So, I mean, you have to take that given what has been the last decade and a half of Knicks basketball, which has been abysmal. So, I mean, it feels like the organization is functional. They're on solid footing. And so I don't think Knicks fans should panic just because their team didn't go out there and make a splashy move at the start of free agency.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking about NBA free agency, the Knicks basically rolling it back. With the moves that they made yesterday, Derrick Rose, Nerlens Noel, Alec Burks is going to be back. Knicks do also sign Evan Fournier to. I guess you really can't get too caught up in the numbers because if you look and you see Evan Fournier 4 for 78, I mean that's what it takes to get a guy in. But you know, 4 for 78, it's almost like what is that $19 million a season? It does seem. Doesn't seem like a lot of bargains in that first day, Chris, of NBA free agency. It's not like anybody's getting like, oh, wow, what a deal.
No, it doesn't feel like there's any bargains. But, I mean, with these NBA salaries, Gordon, you just got to try to keep it in perspective, right, man. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just signed a 5 years, $172 million extension.
Right, that's what I mean.
So it's one of those, not to say that he's not a good player, but I'm just saying the money in the NBA is crazy. I mean, Trae Young's deal, 5 years with a max of 207. Like, it's just, it's a lot of fresh cash flying around in the NBA. I don't know who negotiated their collective bargaining agreement, but that person deserves a pat on the back and a feather in the cap because that was an amazing deal that they got done. It's amazing.
Like, it's like shopping when you're like, if you're going someplace and you're in the airport and you have to buy something in the airport. Like, one time I forgot like my charger for my cell phone. I had to buy one in the airport and you're looking at the.
Oh.
That's the price. That's the price for what that goes for? That's insane.
You don't want to have to do that, Gordon.
No. My wife gave me one trip we took. She gave me one job. It was make sure that all the electronics is taken care of. And just as we sit down in the airport, we get to the gate. I was like Hans Gruber at the Die Hard when he gets dropped out of the building. And I was like, oh, no, the one job I had. Yeah, that was rough.
Wow.
$700 later. I got all the chargers, sweetie. Don't worry. Got it handled. But, yeah, not a lot of bargains there. All right, so we're talking about what the Knicks have done. You have to assume that there's more to come, right? Like, the thing about Evan Fournier, yes, it's an addition because you're subtracting Reggie Bullock. He's going to Dallas. Okay, so you bring in Evan Fournier, upgrade the shooting there. He's going to be in the starting lineup. Elfrid Payton is clearly not going to be back, but there has to be an addition there. So we'll kind of wait and see here as the days go along. Two things I wanted to hit on with you, Chris. A, Stephen A. Smith has been on this point about it's not a guarantee that Damian Lillard will leave Portland. It's not a guarantee that he will ask for a trade. But if he does, that the number one place that he is going to want to go is to the New York Knicks. Here's Stephen A. Smith.
Only way you throw everything out
is if Damian Lillard says, I want out of Portland, because I'm here to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
If Damian Lillard wants out of Portland, and I'm not sure he does yet, his number one choice is going to be the New York Knicks.
Ooh, really?
Not over Portland. He's trying to stay there. If it can work out. But if he decides to leave, I'm betting the house. Ooh. It's the New York Knicks that he'll want to go to. Now, if you're the New York Knicks, Leon Rose, Worldwide West, William Wesley, Scott Perry, Tom Thibodeau, I don't want to hear cap space and picks. You give Portland what the hell they asked for.
What do you think? Do you think that there's any possibility that that actually happens at this point?
I don't know, G. I mean, Stephen A. is talking about betting a house, and that's a pretty expensive house. So, I mean, he's fairly confident. Like, if Damian Lillard decides that it's not going to work in Portland, if he decides he doesn't want to be there any longer, then, you know, the Knicks could be the number one destination for him. Like, I mean, I know a lot of Knicks fans love to hear it. I mean, but I guess for me, the benefit of having the kind of season that you had last year is so that you can be attractive to those stars that become disgruntled and want to get out of their situation. And the beauty in what they did the last couple of days in re-signing these guys is that they're very team-friendly deals. I mean, you're talking about 3-year deals for Rose, for Burks, and Noel. I mean, those are movable contracts as far as the NBA is concerned. So, I mean, you do have the opportunity, even though you don't have the cap space, you do have the opportunity to trade for guys and upgrade the talent level on this team to bring in more difference makers. Now, if Damian Lillard isn't the guy, maybe their attention turns to somebody like Colin Sexton with the Cleveland Cavs, or maybe a Terry Rozier in Charlotte, now that LaMelo Ball is down there, feels like he's expendable. So, I mean, there are still trades to be had, even if Damian Lillard decides that he's going to go back with the Blazers and run it back. But, I mean, the thing that I like about the Knicks is that they're maintaining their flexibility with their cap and with their assets. So when the right opportunity comes along, they can take advantage of it. You couldn't say that about prior regimes with the Knicks. I mean, they were in a hurry to go after whatever superstar wanted to come there, and they didn't care what they had to give up. And then all of a sudden, you got a superstar and not much else around him. So I just feel like they're being very judicious with their assets, and that's the right approach to take, because eventually the right opportunity will come along, and they'll be able to continue to build and have sustained success, which has got to be your goal.
And they have not, what they've not done, which previous regimes kind of did, was they haven't put their eggs in all in one basket, right?
No.
Like they're not holding out hope that the only way they can have a successful season or off season is for Damian Lillard to request a trade and to demand to go to the Knicks. They brought back the same group that in a shortened season was able to win 41 games. You'd like to think that, you know, with some more time with Tom Thibodeau after what was, you know, still a strange season with all the COVID restrictions and everything else, that there is still some potential room for growth there, especially when you add another shooter and you are clearly going to add a point guard. I have to believe, if I'm going to give the faith in the new regime that I'm giving after the season that they had, I have to believe that they're going to at some point go out there and find a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, they got to find a point guard, Gordon. We keep talking about this. Like, they have to find a point guard. And I love what Derrick Rose is bringing to the table, but they need somebody else that's more dynamic, that could be more of a difference maker, and somebody that you know can be reliable. I mean, I love what Derrick Rose was for the Knicks last year, but it's just like, you know, there are limitations there, especially with the amount of minutes that he's going to be able to log over the course of an entire regular season. Like, I mean, that's the thing that you have to worry about with Derrick Rose at this stage of his career, him breaking down again.
Yep.
So, I mean, you got to be able to find somebody else that can share in that workload in the backcourt and make life easier for Julius Randle, for RJ Barrett, and everybody else on this team. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of guys that you can rely on this Knicks team for shot creation and creating opportunities for themselves and for others. There aren't a whole lot of guys like that, Gordon. You need to add more guys like that, because that's today's NBA game. Like, you got to have a point guard. It's the most important position in the sports. It's akin to having a really good quarterback in football. Like, you have to have that, and it just feels like this Knicks team has been starving for that for so long. I mean, trading for Derrick Rose was great last year. I think that was an amazing move. I mean, you're talking about the team winning 69% of the games that he started in, as opposed to 47% of the games that he wasn't in. So, I mean, you clearly see the difference that he makes on this team. But again, you got to have more than just Derrick Rose if you want to try to find yourself in the mix in the Eastern Conference and competing with the big boys in the Eastern Conference this coming season.
And I think a lot of the improvement that you're kind of banking on next year comes from some of the young guys, right? You expect quickly to take a step forward. You saw the growth in Obi Toppin from the start of the season where it looked like he had never played basketball before at times. He just seems so kind of lost on the court too. He was a contributor down the stretch, and you're hoping, I mean, he was the eighth pick in the draft. You're expecting much bigger things from him as well.
No, you are, but I mean, all of those guys can benefit from having another point guard that's on this team, somebody that can help in terms of getting them the ball in their spots and allowing them to do what they do best. Like, I just feel like last year we saw Emmanuel quickly make some splash plays, have some good games, but I mean, that was playing alongside Derrick Rose. I mean, are we really ready to say that Emmanuel quickly is ready to run with the second unit and step into that role and be that guy that can create for others in that second unit without Derrick Rose being on the floor? I don't know if we can say that right now. And so to me, I think being able to bring in a proven commodity, something that's more of a sure thing, makes a whole lot of sense because, it feels like you're rolling the dice with Derrick Rose if you don't bring in any other point guards this offseason. So I think that this is the opportunity, this is the time for the Knicks to try to be aggressive and find the right opportunity to be able to bring in another point guard that can share in that workload with D. Rose.
One more thing before we go to break here. A report from Mark Stein that among the people that is weighing interest from the Knicks would be Carmelo Anthony. Would that be somebody the Knicks should be looking – I mean, you're looking for shooters, right? Carmelo's shown that he can still shoot it. Is that a guy that the Knicks should be looking to bring back at this point?
I mean, the question, that's a good question. I would say this, is he going to be a guy that fits what Tibbs wants to do? Like that, I hate to answer a question with a question, but I think that's where you have to start. And you know how Tibbs is; it starts on the defensive end. And at this stage, I don't know if Carmelo Anthony is in previous stages.
I don't know
exactly. That's what I'm saying. I don't think he's going to be willing to commit the way that Tibbs asked all of his guys to commit on the defensive end. Now I get that Evan Fournier is not a lockdown defender either.
No.
But I mean Evan Fournier, where he's at this stage in his career, you can stomach not having him as a great defender when he's surrounded by four other guys that are pretty good. So I mean I don't know how many guys Tibbs has the appetite to add on this team that are like that are one-dimensional and is focused on the offensive side. So I just don't see Carmelo as a fit for the direction that the Knicks are trying to take this thing. I could be surprised. I think it would be a cool storyline to have Carmelo have the opportunity to come back and finish his career in a Knicks uniform, but I just don't think it's going to be a fit for what the organization is trying to do.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Right now at the Olympics, Simone Biles is taking part in the balance beam. This is her final event of these games, and at least so far. I'm not telling you I know all the different aspects of the balance beam, but at least at this moment in time, I don't know if they go again, I don't know how it works, but at least at this moment in time, Chris, she is in place to medal. I think she's currently in second place in the balance beam, so that would be a nice way, which has been a very difficult, I think, Olympics for her to kind of wrap up her stay in Tokyo. So good to see there. I got to be honest. I was watching some of the – I love track and field, and I was watching some of the video. I don't know who came up with this thought. Somebody came up with it a couple of years ago. The Olympics should absolutely have someone who is just a regular person competing in these events at the same time or maybe even before or afterwards just to show you how difficult – these events would be for a regular person. I was watching the 100-meter women's hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the speed that these women, I mean, anybody in hurdles is traveling, just the speed alone, never mind they're also jumping over hurdles at the same time. The fact that every single person in that event does not like fall down and trip over one of the hurdles at some point is amazing. In it, if I gave you 10 hurdles, I don't know how many hurdles they do. Is it 10? Is it 7? Whatever.
Yeah.
And you had to run 100 meters and jump over each of the hurdles. I'm telling you right now, it would not, even you, Chris Canty, physical freak that you are, you would not have an easy time with that.
Oh, no, I'd hurt myself badly, yeah. Gordon. Yeah, okay. There's no chance that I would even attempt something like that. So, yeah, I get exactly what you're saying, though, because people can't gauge the degree of difficulty when you watch these Olympians do what they do just because everybody else is the best in the world at it. And so if you had the average Joe go out there and try to attempt what they would do, you would have a newfound appreciation for how finely tuned these athletes are. Like, it's incredible some of the things that they can do.
I'd have a better chance going under the hurdles. You know what I mean? Like, not even going over the hurdle. I'll just crawl underneath the hurdles. It would be an easier time. And you do get spoiled. Like, you watch some of these events, and you get spoiled because each and every person, even if they're, like, the worst person in the event, they're still really, really good. They made it to the Olympics. They're still really good. But you get spoiled, like, you're watching individual events. You're like, oh, that wasn't very good. Meanwhile, you'd have absolutely no chance.
You go out there and do better.
You
go if that it, wasn't right. good, you go do better than right. Show us what it should look like.
All right, so we have an update. Simone Biles just won bronze in the balance beam. So there you go. That's
good
the story
her.
There at the Olympics.
Good for her. She's been through so much and having to sit out all of these events and address her mental health. You know that's not what she wanted to do,
no,
Gordon. It was
not.
Something that she had to do. And the fact that she was able to gather herself and to come back and actually compete and win a bronze medal, like, that just shows you the mental fortitude that this young lady has. Like, you got to tip your cap to her, man. I know it's been a rough Olympics for her, but to actually come back and then medal in an event, you know, she's the best in the world. She's the best in the world at what she does. She's one of the best gymnasts, if not the best gymnast of all time.
Yeah.
And to go through that and then to have the opportunity to come back and then actually medal, I mean, man, it's it just shows you how tough she really is.
Yeah, and look, for anybody, and I don't think that it was really all that much, but for anybody who would think to criticize what she has gone through without actually knowing what she's gone through, there is a documentary on Netflix called Athlete A. Go watch that and then see if your opinion changes. So I'll just leave that there. So, all right, so there you go. There's the Simone Biles story. Let's get to the Yankees, Chris. We've made it through 44 minutes of showtime without – I mean, it is unbelievable. You know, I sit down on the couch last night, and I think we were both kind of in agreement yesterday that we weren't fully back on the bandwagon, but it did kind of feel like there might be a little new sense of where the Yankees are, the excitement of the trade deadline, the excitement of Anthony Rizzo. And you feel like, okay, it's time to start. It's winning time, right? There's less than 60 games to go. The wild card, that second wild card, is sitting right there for the Yankees. It's time to start to put things together. The lineup is a little healthier. And with this group this year, it's always something. It is absolutely always something. And as I said in the open, there's nothing more obvious or on brand for this Yankee team to have the good road trip, the road sweep of the Marlins, get everybody kind of feeling good about where you are, only for the Yankees to go out last night and completely flush that good mojo right down the toilet by losing the opening game of their series against the Orioles.
Yeah, they just got rid of all the goodwill that they stockpiled down in Miami. Like, that's what it was. Like, it finally felt like the Yankees were trying to turn a corner. You see Brian Cashman making moves ahead of the deadline. The team responds by sweeping the Marlins, which is what they're supposed to do when you look at the talent of the two teams in that series. And then you come back to the Bronx, and this is what you get. You get drubbed by the Baltimore Orioles. And then on top of that, we get the news after the game from Aaron Boone that Gerrit Cole is going to have to go into COVID protocols.
Yeah,
and he's going to be missing.
Positive.
He's going to be missing for a while. So Nestor Cortes has to step in and make his start tonight. So it's just for all of the positives, all of the step forward, all of the progress that we think the team is making. They have these things happen to them where it's just like, man, when are we ever going to kind of build some momentum? When are we ever going to get on a little bit of a roll? I mean, last night was just one of those games, Gordon. It wasn't the debut that you wanted from Andrew Heaney. He goes out and gives up 4 solo home runs. And we talked about it a little bit in the pre-show meeting, how that should not be insurmountable. But based on what this Yankees offense has done all year long, which is be wildly inconsistent and underwhelming in terms of production, you knew that last night was just going to be one of those where a 4-0 lead was going to be enough for the Baltimore Orioles to win that game. Now, it just so happens that Joely Rodriguez had, you know, he had different plans in mind in the sixth inning. He gives up a base hit, a balk, and a walk, and that leads to two sack flies, and the O's continue to tack on. And it just was one of those things where they just could never get anything going offensively. I mean, you're talking about Jorge Lopez having a no-hit bid going into the sixth inning before Gallo hits that double. Like, I mean, the offense just, for whatever reason, Gordon, they
just never click.
They just don't produce. They just don't click. And you had lefties up and down the lineup last night, so you can't complain about it just being because the team is just heavily right-handed that they can't figure out a way to, you know, they don't have any balance. You can't blame that anymore. That's not the case. I mean, so it's just one of those things, like, when is this offense going to produce at the level that we all expecting them to produce? Because until that happens, Gordon, the Yankees are not going to be able to have sustained success. They're not going to be able to continue to stack series wins. And that's the thing that I worry about, because that's what you're going to have to do in order to secure one of those wild card spots.
Yeah, and they get shut down by a guy who came into the night with an ERA of 6. They lose to an Orioles team that's 30 games under 500. Yankees 0-for-12 with runners in scoring position and had 3 hits. They had 3 hits on the night. And it's kind of crazy. You know, in baseball, even bad teams, like the Orioles are a bad team. They scored 7 runs. The Yankees, it's now been, I think it's, I have the number here somewhere. It's either been 26 or 28 days since the Yankees offense has scored double-digit runs in a game. It's almost been basically a month. And you would think, just by happenstance, there's going to be a day, right, where they just go out there and they hit a bunch of home runs and they just blow out a team. It never happens. It really does not happen on any regular basis, certainly not on what the expectation of a regular basis would be with some of the names in this Yankee lineup. So maybe it's our fault for expecting it, you know, 100 and whatever, 104, 105 games into the baseball season. I mean, this year, the Orioles have scored more runs than the Yankees in the course of the season. That tells
crazy,
you a lot.
Gordon. Yeah. It's crazy, Gordon. I mean, you wouldn't expect a team that has a $200 million payroll to be 25th in runs scored. To your point, the Baltimore Orioles are 23rd. Like, I mean, it's just at some point you have to question everything that you're doing in terms of your overall approach, because you're not getting the results that you're looking for. Let's face it, if this Yankees offense doesn't get things turned around, if they don't start scoring runs in bunches, then this team is going nowhere fast. No. I mean, even if they get in a wild card game, it's going to be an early exit. I mean, that's not the expectation that the fan base had coming into the season for this team, and it's not the expectation that Brian Cashman told us we should have after the moves he made at the trade deadline. This is absolutely a team that should get into a real postseason series. And then we'll see what happens from there, you know, once we get to that point in the season and you see who's healthy and all of that other stuff. But this is a team that has underperformed. And coming off of that weekend down in Miami, you felt like, okay, maybe this is what's going to get them going. Now you got the Orioles, and then you got the Mariners after that in the Royals. I mean, those are all, you know, winnable series. Those are all, you know, kind of soft opponents. It's a softer part of your schedule. This is the chance to get on a little bit of a roll. And then you start off the O's series with a loss like that at home. Like, it's just, I don't know, man. It's one of those things that makes you scratch your head. It makes you shake your head because you're disappointed as a fan. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, you've said it many times, this Yankee team cannot be trusted. I've said multiple times that every time you think you're getting back in, they drag you back out, and you watched it last night. First inning, couple guys on, 2 out, don't score. Second inning, couple guys on, 2 out, don't score. Seventh inning, you know, when the Yankees, at least lately, have started to put some stuff together, first and second, no one out. DJ LeMahieu at the plate, he grounds into a double play. So, and it's not just that. Like, this stretch of games, it's not acceptable for where the Yankees are at to just simply be better than 500 during this stretch of games. This is the time where you really should be winning the majority, not all, because it's tough to win all games at any point, but you have to be winning more than just like half the amount of games that you're playing against the Orioles and the Mariners and the Royals. This is supposed to be the time where you really start to make up some ground. Now, you didn't lose any ground last night. That's about the only good news. That and the cat that got out on the field. That was about the only excitement the Yankee fans kind of had last night, and that was a rough night.
No, it was a rough night. And to your point, you're talking about all those opportunities that the Yankees had with guys on base and runners in scoring position. I mean, you had opportunities with guys that are supposed to be the ones that drive in the runs, big RBI guys like LeMahieu, like Stanton, like Aaron Judge. And the fact that those guys aren't getting it done in those spots against the Orioles, that's the part that disappoints you. Like, I mean, when you create traffic on the bases, those guys are supposed to drive them in. And they're not doing that right now. And they've been inconsistent in terms of being able to produce results throughout the course of the entire season. So, again, I go back to this point. Like, if the lineup doesn't start producing in a big way, then this team is going nowhere fast.
Yeah. And it seemed like a lot of the focus of the post game last night, because I knew I wasn't going to sleep anyway. So I said, let me watch the post game. It's just as well as I did, because I found out about Gerrit Cole having COVID, and now he's going to be out. But it seemed like the focus of the postgame was, well, you know, Andrew Haney, new Yankee, came in, gave up four runs, gave up four home runs. He is not the reason why the Yankees lost that game last night. The Yankees should be able, as you said, be able to overcome four solo home runs against an Orioles team that's 30 games under 500, a guy in Lopez who had an ERA of 6 coming into the night. So after the game, Aaron Boone was asked, why do you think the offense struggled?
First of all, I thought Lopez threw the ball well and didn't give in. I mean, we were able to, you know, create some traffic against him. I think he ended up walking like five guys. So we did have a couple opportunities, but really weren't able to sting much on the bat. And I think he was kind of staying away and made some pitches when he had to, made some big pitches to get out of jams. You know, there was a big double play ball in there when we're crawling back in a little bit, but yeah, just weren't able to, you know, really mount much swinging the bats other than, you know, creating a little bit of traffic.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if Aaron Boone were ever going to snap, this would be the time. Like, asking why you struggled. Like, why do we struggle all the time? We struggle all the time to score runs. I mean, when was the last time the Yankees scored more than seven runs? I mean, it doesn't happen often. So
it feels like forever. It feels really long time.
Even the sweep against the Marlins, it wasn't like they were hitting the cover off the ball. They got a couple of timely hits, and that was about it. So this team, for whatever reason, despite the makeup of the names in the lineup, and it doesn't seem like they're ever going to have the full complement of names in the lineup, because now Gio Urshela is going on the IL, so that's another guy that you're going to lose. But, it's endlessly frustrating when you think, okay, right, like fresh start, now's the time, we're going to start to do something. And this offense, that's been the constant this year. The Yankee offensive problems. There's been other things that have popped up clearly. The bullpen had its time, the starting rotation, the defense, the base running. But the offense, the lack of ability to score runs on a consistent basis, you would think that there would almost be, at some point, a course correction, right? Like, we went through all these games and we're only scoring three or four runs. At some point, the Yankees are just going to start thumping people. Well, it's August. What did I say? It's August 3rd. They have not thumped anybody at any level of consistency this entire season, really.
No, you're right. And to your point, it's a 162-game season, so you think that the law of averages is going to play out.
Right.
That's why they have the phrase, go back to the back of the baseball card. But these guys haven't performed up to that level, and we're still waiting on it to happen, and we're already in August. So it's just like it just feels like – with this particular group, it might not ever happen. And to answer the question that you had about when was the last time the Yankees scored over seven runs, it was July 18th against the Boston Red Sox, and it was the only time they did it since the All-Star break. So, I mean, that's where we're at with this team. And it's frustrating, Gordon, because, like you said, the four home runs that Heaney gave up last night, it should not be something that's insurmountable. It just shouldn't. And the fact is that we've seen teams do that against the Yankees. Like, we saw that with the meltdown from Aroldis Chapman against the Angels. We saw that with the meltdown from Chad Green against the Astros in that series finale before the All-Star break. Like, those teams climb back. They have four, five, six-run innings. Like, that's what they do against the Yankees, but the Yankees can't turn the tables and do that against other teams when, talent-wise, offensively, they should be capable of it. So, I mean, at some point, you have to question what it is that the organization is doing, their philosophy, their approach. You know, how they're trying to coach these guys up, whatever it is, because what they're doing right now isn't going to be good enough to get them where they want to go, which is competing for a championship.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.